Hello, everyone, and welcome to The New Yorkers, a podcast by New York City Cop. I'm your host, Kelly Cop. I'm a published photographer, New York City tour business owner, real estate content creator, podcaster, and above all else, a New Yorker.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
With me today, everyone, I have comedian James Murray right here, also known as Murr, on the hit TV show Impractical Jokers. He is also an executive TV and film producer as the president of Impractical Productions. He is a best-selling author of 9 published titles and tours the world telling jokes to sold-out arenas. But unfortunately, he lives in New Jersey.
I knew that was coming.
What gives, Murr? Why Princeton?
Why did I come on a New Yorker podcast when I live in Jersey now, man?
So, Murr, where are you from? Where were you born? Tell us the whole story.
Like many people, I was born in a hospital that happened to be in Staten Island. Yep. So I grew up in Staten
Island. We love Staten Island.
Thank you. Yeah. Come on by.
I take the ferry there all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you ever do anything on the island?
You know what? I went and checked out Nona's. Yes. Have you been there?
From the movie that was just made about it, right?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
The movie's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a true story. What a crazy story that whole thing is, right?
Yeah, everybody has to watch it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't been there yet, but one day soon. It looks great on the Netflix movie or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Well, Amazon really Prime, whatever it was. Anyway, so I grew up in Staten Island, then I went to Bay Ridge. I kind of reverse Saturday Night Fevered it there.
Yeah.
I lived there for many years and then moved to downtown Manhattan, where I was like for 10 years or so.
What neighborhood in downtown Manhattan?
I mean, right here, Financial District.
Oh, nice.
Down, 10 blocks.
Nice,
Right across from City Hall.
So you're familiar with where we are right now well.
Well, I'll tell you what, on this corner, right here, Canal Street and Broadway, is the shoe store where in Jokers in season one was birthed one of our famous catchphrases of us shouting, Larry! Larry!
Oh, yeah.
That was the shoe store on this corner.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, comes full circle here.
So it's an iconic corner.
It really is, on beautiful Canal Street.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely stunningly beautiful, clean, gorgeous Canal Street. If you're not from New York, come on by.
Yeah, come on by.
You can get, in the same store, you can get knockoff Gucci shoes and fireworks.
You're right, all the same. It's a great 4th of July.
Yeah.
So you were downtown, you lived downtown. For how
many,
long?
I mean, 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. What years were you down here?
Oh, maybe 13 years, 2008 to COVID, to 2020.
Wow.
Then broke my lease.
Yeah.
And just stayed in Jersey.
Nice. And so you're in Princeton?
We're in Princeton now. My wife is from Philly. I'm from New York. So when we get married, we kind of moved halfway in between. And I kept the apartment in Manhattan at the beginning because we filmed so much.
Right.
I was like, well, you know, when I'm tour, what have you, I was like, it'd be easy to have the place here too.
Mm-hmm.
And then when COVID hit, I realized we're not filming in person anytime soon.
Right.
So I broke the lease and just stayed in Jersey.
So how much of a break did you take with COVID from the show?
Believe it or not, not much. Like a lot of TV shows were down for like a year or something like that. We were not. We started filming a new show called Dinner Party.
Mm-hmm.
We shot that from home.
Right.
Then we went back to work in Jokers. Let's say the world shut down, March?
Right,
2020,
right.
We were back filming Jokers by like July.
Wow.
So only a few months. We had to retool the show.
I was just going to ask
Because how do you shoot a hidden camera show where you're interacting with strangers when you can't interact with strangers, right?
How did you do that then?
We had really clever ways to do it for an entire season. Like we would, a lot of the things we do are like focus groups, things like that.
Right.
Right. So if it's a controlled situation like that, like a focus group, we can have people come in, test them, because that was the network requirement. You had to test.
Did you have to wear masks?
Well, then you're looking for the, if everybody's tested, everybody's negative, then you're hoping that you're going to get a percentage of people that are like, okay, I know we're in here, tested negative.
Right.
I'm willing to take my mask off.
Right.
The mask doesn't work for a hidden camera show, you know?
Right, right.
And we got away with it, man. We did a whole season like that, producing segments where we could somehow test people before they got on camera without them realizing they're about to be on a TV show. It was tough, man. It was tough.
Wow.
But we pulled it off.
That's really interesting. You know, I mean, I didn't really think, you know, I didn't think about asking about this, but that was, I'm glad you brought it up. I mean,
oh, and then the we couldn't even film in Manhattan. We usually film here in the city, right?
Right.
I go back to work in like two months filming, but with COVID restrictions, the thing that kept us from filming in Manhattan was elevator restrictions in buildings. You couldn't have more than like two people in an elevator at a time. Well, how the hell do you get 60 crew members and equipment up into a building, two people at a time?
Holy crap.
So we filmed almost entirely of season 9 in Jersey.
That had results. Rough.
Where they didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put all the people in the elevator.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. Wow, that's something I haven't thought about. And then you came back to normal with the show probably the next year, I'm guessing.
Yeah. But no, I live in Jersey now, but I'm still a New Yorker at heart.
Yeah. So how do you commute? Through the PATH train or?
No, I either drive or when I'm filming the TV show, they have a guy that takes us, you know? And so that's it.
Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, you're a regular person like me or Jay who takes the subway every day, but you don't really have to.
Not anymore. But when I lived in the city, I was on the subway every day.
Yeah.
I was, you know, the guys would like bitch at me every day because they still live in Staten Island. Right. So they're fighting the BQE traffic every morning. Sometimes it would take them, like, let's say we're filming, you know, Times Square. It takes them freaking an hour and a half from Staten Island to get to Times Square.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Meanwhile, I was living here. I jump on the 2-3 train. I'm in Times Square in 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Express.
Quick.
And they're like, F you, Mer, you know? And then now the roles are reversed.
Yep.
Now I'm bitching. We're filming in Queens.
Yep.
Right? We filmed in Queens a few months ago, and it took me like 3 freaking hours, man, from Central Jersey. I was pulling what little hair I have left off. And meanwhile, you know, Q and Sal are flying in 25 minutes, no traffic. I'm like, F you.
Yeah. That's hilarious. So do you miss the subway?
I do miss...
What do you miss about it?
I do miss how easy it was to get around, man. That's like, we did a show. We performed Madison Square Garden, right? 2017, we sold out the Garden, right?
Nice.
And it was a huge night, right? Just because we did a live show in Manhattan, 16 years ago, right before the TV show got on the air, and two people bought tickets to see us perform. Right, they spent $5 a ticket. We made $10 profit on the night. The theater cost us $65 to rent, so we lost $55. Right, it was this little shitty black box in
that's awesome
in the West Village. Right,
nice.
Two people bought tickets, and then 8 years later, we sell at the Garden. It was huge.
Right.
Like, and for a New Yorker, it was a hugely emotional night. Right,
my whole
family was there. Parents were still alive. It was unbelievable. Right, but I took the subway to my own show at the Garden.
That's pretty cool.
Right? So I'm in my suit, like performing, commuting up to the Garden. I come out of the 2-3 train on 7th Avenue South. I come out, I see the Garden, and the whole side of the Garden set in Practical Jokers sold out. And literally, tears are streaming down my face, man.
That's pretty cool.
But I'm in the subway commuting with fans of Jokers
that
are going to see my show at the Garden, which I think is such
Did people recognize you on the train?
Oh, yeah. I think it's such a uniquely New York thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a New Yorker. What's the best way to get to the Garden to be at your own show? Take the subway.
Really cool.
You know?
I mean, that's the epitome. You're the epitome. You are a New Yorker. And so
Tom Hanks in the subway all the time.
Yeah.
You see, there's no better way to get around, assuming you don't get stabbed.
Yeah.
But try not to.
Yeah, I try not to every day, actually. Yeah. But which is funny. But, it's interesting, though, because, I moved here. It's about 13 years ago from Florida. And,
where in Florida were you?
I lived in Orlando for a long time.
You did the flip and reverse of everyone.
Everybody says that. That's so funny. Yeah, that I did it opposite.
Yeah.
But I mean, I knew I was a New Yorker, so to speak, when I could fall asleep on the train and wake up at my subway stop.
You got to be careful, man.
You know?
Yeah, I tell you why. One of the stupidest things I've ever done, right? So, when you live in Staten Island, you grew up in Staten Island.
Yep.
And you don't have money. You're not taking a car back to Staten Island. It costs you $100, right?
Yep.
You're taking the ferry. But the ferry from 12:30 p.m. onward, 12:30 a.m. onward, switches once every hour.
Correct.
Right? It jumps from the half-hour schedule. It goes from 15 minutes to 20 minutes to half hour to every hour, right? So between 12:30 a.m. and 5:30 a.m., if you miss that 12:30 ferry, you're waiting until 1:30 to get on the ferry, right? And sometimes you're out drinking in Manhattan, right, with friends. You get drunk. You get on the ferry. You miss it, whatever. You're waiting. Then you have one option on Staten Island. the Staten Island Rapid Transit, which is the opposite of rapid, right?
Oh, I don't know that one.
It goes one direction, right? It's just one train goes to the end of the island and back. And I grew up on the far end of the island, the South Shore, right? So I had no choice but to get on the train. So you wait in the ferry terminal for like a freaking hour. You finally get to Staten Island. You're drunk. The alcohol is setting in.
Right. Right?
Like you are effing drunk, right? So yeah. What I can't tell you how many times I've fallen asleep on the Staten Island train.
Right.
Knowing I got 40 minutes to get to the other end of the island. And you go all the way to the end of the island.
You got
to
pee.
You go all the way to the end of the island, but you're asleep.
Yeah.
And the train turns around and goes back to the ferry. Do you know how many times gotten on the train on Staten Island drunk and wound up back at the ferry an hour and a half later? I was like,
whoa.
Can I curse?
Yeah.
I was like, fuck. Come on, man. I did it again. The worst. Man,
gosh. You know what? I've never taken the Staten Island subway, I guess.
It's above ground.
I want to see what it's like, you know?
It's,
and you live at the end, you said? You used to live
at
the end?
I was at the end of the
island.
Well, I want to
take the rail line. Yeah, I want to check it out one day, just in general. Yeah.
Well, I'm a train guy. I'm a train buff, too.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah.
That's,
I brought a little gift for you, by the way.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, I don't know if you know what.
Thank you, too.
My wife and I bought a house in Jersey to save one of America's oldest model railroad clubs.
Yeah.
So we live in Princeton, but 10 minutes away, it hit the Wall Street Journal like a year ago that this club called Pacific Southern Railway has been around for like 75 years. The owner, the original owner of the house started building the model railroad in 1950. The club formed in 1964.
Yeah.
And it's this club of people that are just passionate about model railroad trains, right?
Pretty
and
amazing.
Building. And the club is in the basement of a real house in Jersey, in Rocky Hill, right?
Wow.
New Jersey. And the club has grown and grown and grown, and the railroad's grown, and it's bigger than the house itself. It's in the basement. It's so big, it's 12,000 square feet of track. The house I live in, my house, is 4,600 square feet. The model railroad club is 12,000 square feet, right? They knocked out a foundation wall of the house and kept going under the lawn. You got to see it,
that's
man.
That's pretty amazing.
It's all New Yorkers, people from New Jersey, Pennsylvania that have.
And this is where again, specifically?
It's in Central Jersey, Rocky Hill, right? It's unbelievable, man. And so it hit the Wall Street Journal a year ago that this club, the former owner of the house, sadly passed from cancer and the club was going to lose their home. And who in their right mind, if they buy the house, is going to be like, okay, your club of like 50, 60 people can still come in 6-8 times a week to my home and work on your model trains,
right?
And take up 12,000 square feet of the house and open the house up to the public every year. It'd be crazy. No one would do that, right? So the night before they were forced to sell the house, my wife and I bought the house simply to save Pacific Southern Railway.
That's pretty amazing.
Because I'm a huge model train buff, right? And I'm obsessed with trains.
Right.
And,
pretty amazing.
And so... So we bought the house, saved the club. My wife moved her candle company in there.
Wow.
And if I have candles, we'd run an Alzheimer's charity out of there. And now I'm a member of one of America's coolest, longest running nonprofit model railroad clubs. It's Pacific Southern. So I brought you, we just released a brand new line of boxcars, Pacific Southern boxcars by Walther's Trains, which is like the biggest hobby manufacturer in the country, in the world. And I brought you one of our brand new Pacific Southern branded model collectible box cars from the train.
I love it.
So it gives you the full history of the train club and where the newest owners of the train club, and that's for you if you'd like. It's
I love it, buddy.
Pretty cool memorabilia,
appreciate
man.
That, my friend.
There's only 1,000 of them made, so now you got one of them.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
thank you.
I don't know if you're into trains, but if you're into trains or you ever go on the Staten Island Rapid Transit, you know, it's based on, there's a lot of parts of the layout that are New York based and New Jersey based. It's really cool, man.
That's amazing, my friend. Thank you.
You got it.
You're thoughtful, buddy. Do you ever go to the Grand Central train show, the Christmas train show they have too, the little train show?
It's unbelievable.
I love it. It's one of my favorite things every year to go see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Botanical Gardens one.
What's that?
Botanical Gardens one?
Yes, I've been to that one as well. And they have one over, I think it's down now, but they have one at the Liberty Science Center too. That was really incredible, which is something to see. But I mean, come to Pacific Southern if you know.
That is awesome. Yeah, we got to take a trip out there and check that
absolutely
out.
It's wild, man. You know, it really is something.
Well, let's talk about, let's jump back now real quick to, you're born in Staten Island.
Yep.
Then what happens?
Then you die. Then what happens? I went away to college.
You went to school there.
Yeah.
So from what I understand, you went to like an all boys school. Is that correct?
Yeah, all boys Catholic high school.
And that's how
our method got impractical jokes.
Yeah, and that's how you met all your buddies, right? That's amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We did improv together in high school.
Yeah.
Our high school was Mendocino Farrell. It was a great school. And we did performing arts there and theater and improv and loved doing comedy together. And then we went to different colleges. And after college, we came back and formed our comedy group and started performing live for many, many years and failed for many, many years.
Right.
And then along the way, I got a job in TV development.
Nice.
And my job was to like create and sell TV shows and pitch TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys and I were still doing comedy together. And so we created Impractical Jokers, the idea of it. And we shot a sales tape and I pitched it through my job at North South Productions, which is a New York company, a New York TV company based here in Manhattan. And then sold it to True TV. And that was 16 years ago.
Wow.
We're about to hit 16 years of filming this show.
That's amazing.
In just a few weeks. We started filming Jokers March 2010. And so we're about to hit, and we go back to work March coming up. So 16 years we've been making this show.
That's amazing. I read somewhere too that your very first year on Practical Jokers did over 32 million views or something like that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Right out the gate, you guys were cranking, you know.
Yeah, we moved over to TBS now. Mm-hmm. True's kind of changed the programming. So we moved to the big sister of True TV, you know, the TBS, which is really cool to be on such a big cable channel.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a wild ride, man. I never thought it'd still be going this many years in, you know?
Well, I mean, you're...
It's certainly not because of our looks. That's for damn sure. We look like the kind of guys you settle for. You know what I'm saying? And I don't look famous. I look like an accountant, man. People look at me like I look like a pharmacist. People like they look at me like you look familiar. Is my prescription ready?
I would have never thought that stuff, but you're a celebrity, my friend. You know, so you know do you get recognized a lot?
Yeah,
I would assume you do. I should say.
Yeah,
you know. I mean,
it's a good thing.
It's here right when you walked in.
It's a cool thing, man. It's like you never know. Well, I tell you what, it keeps us humble. Like you say, like, oh, we're famous.
Yeah.
It keeps us humble. Like, you know, I say we're like, you know, we're like Z-list celebrities, right?
Z-list.
I'll tell you, there's still every day something keeps me humble. Okay.
Right.
So like, I came not too long ago. I was taking the subway here in Manhattan and I come out on 34th Street. From the one train or whatever, right? And these two girls come up to me and they're with their two boyfriends, right? And they have thick Long Island accents, right?
Yeah.
The girls are like, oh my God, Mar. I was like, hi, how are you? Can we take a photo? I was like, yeah, sure, we take a photo. And the boyfriends don't know who the hell I am, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, who's this? And one girl says to her boyfriend, she goes, babe, you don't know him? That's Mar. He's from the Impossible Pranksters. He's on Comedy Central on Wednesday nights. I was like, you got every detail wrong, man. I'm on Impractical Jokers Thursday nights on TBS. Every detail wrong.
That's hilarious.
So, you know, reality check.
Yeah, you know,
Impossible Pranksters on Wednesdays on Comedy Central. Jeez.
That's funny, though. I mean, but, you know, you're a household name, all of you guys, you know? So, you know, I've watched you guys for years and... You know, we feel like, you know, people feel like they know you.
Yeah, I think that's what's different about the show is that we're not playing characters. We're playing ourselves.
Exactly.
Right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
you're real. You're 100% real.
And people are like, when they meet us, like, I feel like I already know you, which I think is the biggest compliment. And the other thing people say, which I take, I take really as a matter of pride, and I think it means so much to me, is they say that we're the one show like the family agrees on. You know, like the kids, the parents, the grandparents. And that's a huge compliment. Like I think it means we're doing our job right.
I completely agree. But you're making everybody laugh, you know, and, you know, it's just nice to laugh today, every day, you know, go to a show and just, you know, you're going to laugh and enjoy yourself, you know. But there's some skits that are really memorable to me, you know, and I love the one too. And I give you credit because you're strapped to a taxi cab. You're reading your book.
Yeah.
And you have like a stunt driver, I assume, cruising around this track.
Yeah.
And the end is hilarious too. You trick your friends. But I mean, there you guys were that was pretty scary in my opinion too for you.
Sure.
It was stressful to watch.
Well, I think what you're referring to is the greatest punishment ever on Practical Jokers, in my mind.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know if we'll ever top it, right? Because there's iconic punishments like them throwing me out of an airplane, skydiving,
right.
Joe playing the genie, Genie Does His Wish, crushing the set, or Captain Fatbelly on the Roosevelt Island tram. These are iconic things, right? But I faked my own death on television,
which
I don't know if any prank show in history has gone that far for
right.
It took me 5 years to pull this off.
Wow.
If you haven't seen this at home,
you guys have to watch this episode.
I'm going
to
paint the picture for you, okay? So outside of Jokers, I write thriller novels. I've got 9 books out in stores. I love writing them. My latest one is a serial killer thriller called You Better Watch Out. Mm-hmm. It's set at Christmas time. It's really scary. We're making it into a movie this year, actually.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so the publisher often has me do the audiobook for a book. The guys set up a punishment where I would read a chapter from the audiobook.
Yeah.
And for real, if you buy the audiobook for You Better Watch Out from St. Martin's Press, I read the chapter, right? But they wanted to strap me to the hood of a race car with a professional driver racing around a track at like 100 miles an hour while I'm in a fire suit and a helmet on, and I'm strapped down to the windshield reading a chapter of my book, screaming my ass off, presumably, right?
Yes.
This is their punishment idea. What Sal didn't know was that the whole thing was my secret idea. I had Q and the writers pitch him the idea secretly, but it was my idea, right? Because at a certain point while I was riding on the windshield of the car, after like 10, 20 minutes of riding on the windshield, screaming my ass off.
I mean, that guy's doing donuts and it's crazy.
At a certain point, I was going to have the car go around the end of the track, disappear for a split second while a duplicate car dressed up the same way with a guy that looks just like me in the same hazmat suit, same helmet, holding the same book, strapped to the windshield, takes off at speed. But that guy is a stunt guy, right? And as the car takes a turn too tight, that stunt guy would fly off the track, hit the ground, roll, presumably get maimed, injured, killed, who knows. Sal would witness this and go running across the track. So we rehearsed this punishment for hours before Sal arrived on set.
Wow.
The 60 crew members of Jokers, right? We trained again and again and again. React now. React, react, react. Practice. Okay, now you scream. Now you scream. Now you go running. And you go running. All with the intention of tricking Sal to think something horrible happened.
Yep.
So he would also go running across the track.
He did.
It worked like a gen. I rehearsed 10 times.
I mean, the details had to be the timing.
I rehearsed 10 times getting cut off the car because I'm strapped down. Cut off the car immediately, strip my clothes off to where I have the EMT outfit underneath, race shoeless across the field into the ambulance, then put my whole EMT outfit back on, put the boots on, the whole hat, fake hair. I had to get it in, I had like 20 seconds to achieve all this. So we kept rehearsing again, again, and again, getting faster and faster and faster, because once Sal starts running across the track, the clock is ticking before he will see me get ripped off the car, you know? So I had like 30 seconds to make all this happen, and we pulled it off, and Sal fell for it hook, line, and sinker. He comes running across the track, sees what he believes to be my body and EMT workers working on it, trying to resuscitate me, calling for a helicopter, and he's full-blown panics. At the key moment, I stand up for my own body, dress as an EMT worker, pull off my hat and fake hair, and say, "Well, Sal, this was always your punishment."
Yeah.
And he almost shit his pants.
He did. He did.
It was the greatest punishment of all time.
I thought he's going to have a heart attack.
He, an hour later, we'd real EMT workers on set, right? An hour later, they took his blood pressure, and his heart rate was still like a 150.
Yeah.
And it was on such an adrenaline high for me. Hours later, I go home. My wife and I are getting ready for bed. We're brushing our teeth.
Yep.
And I finally calm down, and I take the toothbrush out of my mouth, and I turn to my wife, Melissa, and I say, "Did I go too far?" Because me faking my own death took 3 real years off my friend's life.
Well, it was performed, if that's the right word, perfectly. The timing, everything. And when I was watching it, and when, you know, because you, the viewers too, are watching it thinking that you're hurt too.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I was thinking, you know, you kind of can, in your own mind, think, oh, well, this is what he did or what they're doing. But I had no idea what was happening. Like, how, what is this happening right here? And then the twist that
I remember.
No idea.
You know, when we first shot it, I had the cut of it before it went on TV. You know, we We oversee the editing of the show. And the editor sent me the cut of it. And I got a group of my friends together months before it aired on TV. And I said, I want you to see something. And I played the punishment. And when the reverse happened, that I stand up and pull the wig off and reveal it was all a double cross. Literally, there's like 20 of my friends there. They all screamed out loud. I was like, I nailed it, man. They had no idea that was a twist. It was coming. I was like, I pulled it off. Like, I can't imagine what happened throughout homes in America when people saw the twist.
Right.
And, you know, because I don't think they saw it coming, man.
Well, it's really cool how you did show how your taxi came here and then the second one.
Yeah.
Just how fine-tuned it was when you
It's so funny. Like, after that punishment aired, I was like, how do we top this? I was like, I legit got depressed. I was like, we can never come up with a better punishment than that, you know? Yeah, we have to end the show. But now we're two seasons later. We're still going.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you can top it. I know you can.
Well, I'm working on it. I got some ideas.
You know, what cracks me up, too, is how you guys are so comfortable just almost being nude on the show, you know? And, you know, and there's this one episode that, I mean,
only me. I'm the only one that's naked, man.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting to.
Yeah.
But I was cracking up so hard this one episode. I mean, I had tears come out of my eyes because it's like a whodunit type, you know, like the candle.
Like a murder mystery?
Yeah, like a murder mystery.
The Rigol punishment?
Yeah. Yours, is that I don't remember the specific name. Is that why you were like laying on a couch with like a thong on or something? And you're, I mean, just, you know, they had to blur some of it out because it, you know, you're completely almost showing everything. I was laughing so hard just and how you're just do it.
It was like one of these, it was like one of these murder mystery nights.
Exactly.
In a mansion, you know, Rob Riggle was playing the host of this murder mystery night.
Yeah.
A real group comes in to solve a crime. Right. And they go into the library of this mansion. They're all dressed in period costumes, you know, from the 1920s, whatever. They're all sleuths. They got, you know, they've got, you know, different testing kits. Yep. They've got magnifying glasses to look for clues. They walk into the library and there's the dead body. There's always the dead body, right? I'm the dead body, completely naked with a G-string on, slumped ass up, head down over the side of a couch. And of course, Riggles manhandling my butt cheeks.
Yep.
Then of course it ends with him ripping off the G-string and I'm there as a naked, they move my body onto like a sawhorse, you know,
around.
But I got to play a dead body the whole time naked. And he's bouncing me up and down on the wooden hobby horse.
It is hilarious. God.
It was mortifying, man.
Well, I mean, to top it off at the end, when I was crying, laughing because he takes your G-string, like pulls it, you know, I mean, that had to be,
it was painful.
It's funny, man.
Yeah. I've been naked like a dozen times on this show. The best one was, just last year it aired. We filmed here in Manhattan. We told Sal, we want you to be a motivational speaker, at a real company in Midtown, right?
Yep.
He goes in, it's a real deal company, man. Like, it's like, they do real estate and what have you. And he goes into the conference room and there's 20 real employees of this company. They're dressed in suits, formal wear, their work, you know? And he goes, well, what's the punishment? We said, Sal, you'll know when you know. 20 minutes into his presentation, one by one, all the real employees of this company started taking their clothes off until he was in a conference room in Midtown with 20 completely naked adult strangers. And he's such a germaphobe, he lost his mind, right? Like, and then he's panicking, he's grossed out. Then at the end, they said, hey, it's our buddy Jim's birthday. We want to sing happy birthday tonight. And they wheeled out a giant birthday cake. And I popped out of the cake also completely naked, but I had crazy glued on a prosthetic penis that was like a foot long, man. We had to blow the whole thing out and it's swinging like this. And then they brought out hot dogs for everybody to celebrate. So I'm eating a hot dog as my phallus is swinging. It was so funny, man. And he had to take it seriously in character. God.
How do you come up with this? Like, how do you guys come up with this? Like, are you sitting around a round table and like, let's do this? Or
yeah, I mean, that
you're surprising each other though, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
it's just improv.
I tell you what, like, when we start, go back to pre-production in a few weeks, just don't go to the bathroom. Once you leave the room to go to the bathroom, that's when you come back in 5 minutes later, and the writer's like, shh, 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 and he's like, shit, they just came up with something while I was out of the room to punish me.
Yeah.
That's how it happens. Yeah. You know? So...
It's just such a great show. It's such a great idea. Obviously, you know, it's been so successful for so long, you know? So now you have some shows coming up.
Oh yeah. I got a couple of local shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I have four shows or five shows at the Stress Factory. I mean,
right here.
20 minutes away, half hour away in New Brunswick, mm-hmm. February 20th, 21st. I'm at the Stress Factory. I do a solo comedy show.
Right.
In addition, we do the Impractical Jokers Tour, but I do a solo show as well.
Right.
And then March 6th, Friday, March 6th, I'm in Peekskill, New York.
Nice.
Up on the Hudson, at a theater, a great town, beautiful town, performing live as well. It's a lot of fun. My solo show is wild, man. My voice is sore right now because I had four shows this weekend. I just got back last night. I'm in Tacoma right. Next weekend.
You make me feel better about myself. I don't remember yesterday.
Where the hell was I, man?
Well, you travel a lot. It's okay. It's okay.
I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Actually, I did see that.
Yeah.
Wait, was there?
This weekend. Next week, this coming weekend, I'm in Tacoma.
I also saw, was there just an episode where you did the weather? Was that a few weeks ago?
Dude, I've never done the weather before.
Good. Yeah.
Where the hell we were, right?
In the Midwest.
In the Midwest somewhere.
Yeah.
I can't remember. So they had me do the weather live. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do weather, nor do I know how to do a green screen.
Right.
Because it's the opposite of what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Right? Which is hard.
Right.
Right? Like, I look at that camera, I know left and right, I can figure it out, right?
Right.
But the green screen, when you're watching yourself on the monitor, it's the opposite of, I don't know why they flip it, but they do. So, and also, I don't know what the goddamn symbols mean, man. Like, they have a cold front coming in the road. Also, the bit was like 4 minutes long.
Yeah.
You know how hard it is to talk for 4 minutes straight about weather?
Right.
So by the end, it just derailed.
Yeah,
I was
great,
like, go outside and fucking look, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, open your window shades, look. You know, live.
Yeah, you did do that.
Stop asking me where the weather is. Look outside.
Well, I forget how you ended it. You said, you know, go out, what, the last days we have or something.
Yeah, the final days.
You said something like that.
Yeah.
The final days on Earth.
The final moments we have left on Earth. You know, there's an asteroid hurtling toward us right now.
That's how you ended it. Go out and enjoy the final days left on Earth.
I know. I'm just, you know, it is like, I can show you a funny thing. Like, literally, I always joke that there's an asteroid hurtling toward Earth right now.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one that knows when and where it's going to hit, right? Literally on my phone right now. What was I just watching before in the bathroom here? Independence Day, when New York City gets destroyed by goddamn aliens.
I love that show.
Man.
I do too. I love to watch, you know, disaster movies where, especially when New York is getting, you know, it's always the target.
It's always New York, man.
You know, it's cool. It's kind of cool.
It's the greatest city in the world. You know? That's what.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then you think, what would I do if I was in this situation in Independence Day? But,
As I was saying, so yeah, I'm on tour. I got a couple of local shows coming up.
How do people get tickets?
You can get your tickets at murrlive.com, M-U-R-R, murrlive.com. My live show is wild. Because the whole second half of the show, I have no idea what's going to happen. I make it up as I go. So first half of the show is like stand-up comedy, like a traditional stand-up comedy show. I tell some of the most embarrassing errors of judgment I've ever made because of Impractical Jokers. But the second half of the show, I do two games with the audience that are different every single show. First game is I call it text roulette.
Yeah.
I borrow three audience members' cell phones.
Oh, man.
And I start scrolling through their text messages and I start asking them questions.
Yeah.
And when an idea hits me, I say, do you mind if I text your boss? Do you mind if I text your mother, your son, your what have you? And then from their phone, I text on their behalf as if it's them. And then it starts texting back and forth. And inevitably, I FaceTime the people that I just texted, and it's absolute chaos. It's hysterical.
Oh, wow.
And then the final game I play is Impractical Jokers Live.
Right.
Meaning, I choose someone from the audience, put an earpiece in the ear, send them out in the streets of Jersey or, you know, Peekskill, New York, and live on the screen, we watch them in the theater, and live on the spot, I tell them what to say and do.
Wow.
I just come up with it off the top of my head. It's like watching the TV show happen live. It's wild.
Is there anything that you know, when the guys, you know, they tell you what to do, and it's just interesting because, you know, I can see your face or whoever, you know, when you got your face just like, oh man, I got to do this. Is there something you just haven't done? You're just like, I couldn't say that or do that, or it's too far. You're just like, ah, whatever, I'll just do it.
We all have our Achilles heels.
Yeah.
You know, I think I would never disrespect an elder or things like that. This, I mean,
didn't you throw like water in so simply some person's face?
I did. Well, that's the twist with that. That was a bit in Brooklyn. We filmed in Brooklyn. We filmed a pizzeria, right? And the challenge is you've got to angrily storm into the pizzeria, and then grab with a glass of water, and then the guys tell you in your ear why you're about to throw a glass of water on the cashier's face.
Yeah.
Well, you don't, so you don't know the reason. It's always something ridiculous. Like, you know, you said, you said my breasts aren't big or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm a man. You said I need a breast implants, but I'm a man. You know, whatever it is, something dumb they come up with, right? You don't know the reason. And you also don't know who the cashier is.
Right.
Which is the twist. So the last time we played the game, I go storming into the pizzeria, full like jug of water. Right. And behind the counter was my wife's grandmother.
Oh, is that
right? Her 80 something year old grandmother, Betty, who's lovely. And she's there. She's got the hairnet on. Yeah. She's got the uniform from the pizzeria. I'm like, fuck, man. I gotta throw a full glass of water on my grandmother-in-law. Yeah. It's like, how do you do it?
But you did it.
I did it. I did it.
It was, I was laughing.
But then I broke at the end. I broke character. I was like, are you okay? I'm sorry, nanny.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That was pretty cool. You know, there's an episode too. What makes me laugh is just, you know, you're playing these jokes on people and then they're just how their brains are and they're looking at you like, what's going on? Who is this guy? You went and acted like this guy from this magazine. I forget the name of the magazine. But at the end of the conversation, you know, you said that your girlfriend or your wife was walking in. And so you're like under the table talking to him.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny how you get people just go along with it. And you're both underneath the table talking.
Yeah.
You know, underneath the table talking because you don't want to, you know, her to see you there.
Yeah.
You know? And it was really funny.
That was one of those challenges. So the crux of it, you explained it well. The crux of it is working as workers at a fake company we set up.
Right.
We hire a temp worker for the day to fill in for an employee that's out. Right. And there's a lot, we fake the whole thing. There's a lot of hullabaloo going around. We have other crew members walking through. It feels real. Right. So this temp worker that's hired, there's no reason they would think it's not a real situation.
Correct.
You're a real office building here in Manhattan. There's lots of other employees going in and out, what have you. And then we embed with this person. What you don't see on TV is we embed with them for like 25 minutes to form a relationship with them of normalcy before and camaraderie before we start with where things get weird.
Right.
and we cut it down to 30 seconds
Correct.
On TV
yeah.
of
Makes
normalcy,
sense.
Yep. right? But this person has had 20 minutes to form a human relationship, laughing, where you're from, you know, blah, blah, oh, I've worked here 6 years, whatever bullshit you're saying, right? And then trim it down on TV. But that's how you have to wait until you feel it's the right time to strike. And at the key moment, when we feel we've formed a human bond with the person and they'll go along for the ride, and you're also judging, this is another secret of the show. Like, I look at when we hire, fake hire,
yeah.
We hire 30 people to fit. We only need three spots. Right? I need three employees, one for me, one for Sal, one for Q. Right. But we hire 30 people for the day. And then, our producers will go through pre-interview them downstairs before they don't know they're on TV. They're doing other jobs in the company for like an hour before they get to us. They're jumping around different departments because the producers are getting a sense of their personality. Are they good TV? Will they fall for the bit? And they'll pitch us, our producers will say, I like this guy or this woman a lot, you know, she's outgoing, she I think she'll fall for it, what have you. And then we'll look at the pictures, think about it, and we'll choose, right? And then we choose the person. In this particular bit, it was a wild, like, we're like, can we pull this off? Because the crux is, you don't want your boss to come in to confront you. So can you hide under their desk? And will this person lie for you
yep.
and say you're not there, right? So you've got to talk a stranger
yep.
into allowing you to climb under their desk between their legs
mm-hmm.
and lie on your behalf that you're not there in the office because you don't want to get caught, blah, 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 whatever, right? That's a big ask,
yeah.
man. You know,
yep.
it takes a certain kind of person to go along with that ride.
Yep.
But if you get them, if they go along with the initial ask, then you're golden.
Yep.
You know, and how far can you push? You know, that's the bit. It's great.
And it worked.
It's a great
that
bit.
One worked. I mean, you know, you're going on the desk and the guy too, he's talking to the desk, you know, and it's, you know, it's hilarious.
I think Joker's is really a study of human psychology.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know, I agree.
Have you ever heard of Derren Brown?
Maybe.
Derren Brown is a magician, hypnotist, bullshit artist from the UK. He does a lot of shows in New York. He comes on his tour, worldwide tour. Brilliant. Brilliant comedian, hypnotist, what have you, mentalist. One of his classic bits is brilliant psychology. he writes a letter to a thousand people, saying that he is a psychic, and he gives them $100 in the envelope, and he sends the envelope out to 1,000 strangers and says, "I want you to. I'm a psychic. I have a prediction for you that so and which this horse is going to win the race this Saturday. Okay, here's the $100. Bet on this horse." And there's 7 horses in the race, right? And he sends 7 different horses to 1,000 people, right? So out of those 1,000 people, a percentage of them are going to win,
right?
Right? There's a percentage. It's like 70 people are going to win. Percentage wise, because they bet on, he bets all 7 different horses. He bets, 100 people, this horse, 100 people, this horse, 100 people, what have you. Right. So of the 100 people that won from the 1,000, he then sends another letter a week later with another $100 saying this, to prove to you, I'm a psychic. I'm going to send you another $100, bet on this horse next Saturday. And of those 100 people that have won, they bet. And of those 100 people, 50, 10 win. And then winner. After 4 weeks in a row, there's one person from that pool of 1,000 originally that has won 4 weeks in a row based on this guy being a psychic. And then he does the final ask and says, "Now it's your turn to prove that you believe in my abilities." This person has won 4 weeks in a row on someone else's money.
Right.
Then he says, "Now it's your turn to prove that you, believe me. I want you to bet $1,000 of your own money on this horse." And they always do. Because now they've got the belief.
Right, yeah.
In for an inch, in for a mile. Is that the expression? Whatever. Oh, in for a mile.
Yeah.
Whatever the expression is, He's convinced the person, it's psychology. To go, if you can get him on this initial ask and keep going and going and going, suddenly by the end, you're like, how the hell did we get this far? It's brilliant.
It's in a sense, I don't know, like the superstition of people wearing the same jersey to a game, sure. Too. I don't know.
Belief, the power of belief, right?
The power of belief. Ah, it's just interesting. But how often does it not work? Is that a question I can ask?
Yeah, it's a good question.
When people just kind of like this,
I think we've gotten fairly good at knowing how to choose our marks carefully to minimize that. Mm-hmm. The variable we can't control is how many people recognize us.
Correct.
That is what it is. Right?
Happen a lot.
So it's definitely more difficult to film in malls, things like big public spaces. Mm-hmm. But I think we're pretty good judges of character and reading people almost instantly.
Right.
So we'll pull the plug in 30 seconds before we waste too much time.
Gotcha.
Whether somebody doesn't pop for TV or is not going to play along, we'll pull the plug almost immediately.
Interesting.
So I think we have a fairly good percentage success rate.
Right. So, I know you got to get going soon. So, and I could talk to you for hours. This is so interesting. Real quick, are you scared of heights?
I don't think anymore, man.
Yeah.
They throw me out of an airplane in the Joker's movie. I flew outside a plane on the wing. I free climbed onto the wing of an airplane and held on for an hour. So am I scared of heights anymore?
Yeah.
Fuck.
No. Yeah. Well, I was thinking that, I did read that and I thought, well, you do jump out of planes and stuff. But the Roosevelt Island tram bit that you guys did too. I mean, was it Sal who was
that was on Joe
top?
On top? Yeah.
Joe on top. That gave me anxiety just watching that,
No kidding, man.
I don't know how he stood on top of that.
People ask how we got away with that. Roosevelt Island tram is the only privately owned public transportation in New York City. This is a little fun fact for you.
Yeah.
It's not part of the MTA. It's not part of, it's not part of LIRR or not Metro North.
It's Metro Card or whatever.
It's its own private company owns that tram. That's the only possible way. I don't know how, man.
How long did it take to do that bit with the Roosevelt Island tram?
A couple hours.
The
rigging was the issue. You had to get, and time it with us going by. It was tricky.
Wow. That was.
Yes. I can't believe you pulled that off.
Yeah. That was stressing me out watching that.
I think there's only us and Spider-Man pulled that off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I always say that, when I'm with people, if it breaks down, Spider-Man will help us.
Yeah.
So, you have a parachuting ferret tattoo. Are you like, how is this guy knows this?
I'm just the first video podcast. I just the high def camera. We should be able to get it. There it is.
I didn't plan him doing this. This is awesome.
It's better that it's not focused. It's better that it's out of focus.
That is so funny. Well, Thanks, Murph, for showing people. I didn't. That was not planned.
And then also, before you ask, yes, my driver's license, my New York State driver's license, still has no eyebrows.
Oh yes, look at I saw. Look at it. No eyebrows. Tell them the story. Tell them that story real quick. Yeah, that's so funny.
Everybody, hold on.
Hold on, everybody. tell everybody the story. Tell everybody the story about
that. It's about to end. Finally, in March, I get a new one. They shaved my eyebrows off and shaved all my hair, yeah. And then they made me go straight from the punishment with no eyebrows to the DMV. Right. So I go downtown to the DMV over there on the west side. Right. I walk in, I take the photo with no, I look like Satan, right? I look like a see something, say something.
Yep.
I walk in, I take the photo. The woman turns the monitor around. She goes, "Sir, do you want to take a new photo?" I was like, "Nope, that's the one."
That is awesome.
Dude, I look like a baked potato going through a divorce.
Oh man, it's been awesome having you on the show. Okay, Mur, 10 question quick fire.
Hit me.
Maybe 11. Best NYC pizza.
It's closed. Nunzio's in Staten Island. Sorry. Shut down though. But if you know.
Subway pet peeve.
Subway pet peeve?
Yep.
I don't like the bread. I like Jimmy John's better.
Bodega order at 5 a.m.
5 a.m. specific. It's always the same.
Kind of talked about that earlier a little, like on the train.
Egg and cheese, salt, pepper, ketchup.
Nice. Times Square, yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah.
But no.
Best people watching location.
You named it Times Square.
Yeah.
Rockefeller Center steps watching people ice skate.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Yeah. Over there.
Do you have a favorite NYC movie?
Oh, good question. Independence Day.
Yes. There you go.
There you go.
Great answers, my friend. So, Mur, before we let you go today, we here at the New Yorkers want to know what it means to you, James Murray, to be a New Yorker.
Good question. I think that I'm proud to be a New Yorker, of course. It's our heritage. Our families are all from here. We're multi-generation New Yorkers. But also, New York is the unspoken character of Impractical Jokers, you know? It's its own. You cannot extract New York City from Impractical Jokers,
right?
Because the people are so unique and is such a cross section of humanity. I think it is the magic recipe of what makes our show so special. It's just how many cultures, how many different kinds of people with varied interests you interact with on a daily basis. It's what makes New York City great.
Completely agree. Nicely said, my friend. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the New Yorkers podcast. James, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on social media?
You can find me anywhere on social media. You know where to find me. But also, get your tickets at murlive.com. Become a member of Pacific Southern Railway virtually or in person by going to pacificsouthern.org. And new episodes of Impractical Jokers every Thursday night on TBS.
Perfect.
There you go.
Once again, I'm your host, Kelly Kopp, also known as New York City Kopp, all across my social media. Please like and subscribe to the New Yorkers podcast, and you can follow the New Yorkers on social media at the New Yorkers podcast. You can leave a rating or a comment to let us know how you're enjoying the show, my friends. We read through all your comments and DMs, so please, we would love to hear from you. Thank you, Sue Rothwell, Morgan Braun, and Julie Alexander for your kind words on the last episode. It means a lot, my friends. Thank you. If you want to be featured at the end of an episode, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or a comment on Spotify. And also thank you, Rhonda McNeil, Kurt Reimer, and Mike Martin for your comments on Facebook, my friends. Have a lovely day, and we will see you next time.
This is the last stop on this train. Everyone, please leave the train. Thank you for riding with MTA New York City Transit.